All right, so let's dive into something that, well, it might seem kind of straightforward at first, but trust me, it gets surprisingly twisty. We're gonna be talking about attempted bank robbery. But you know, what does that really even mean? Like, picture this, right? You're all geared up, got the wig on, the notes ready, even like instructions for a smooth heist tucked away in your briefcase. You walk into the bank, you hesitate, things just feel off, and you walk back out empty-handed. Didn't even make any demands or anything. So are you guilty? Huh. That's the question at the heart of this United States v. Ballew case, a Fifth Circuit decision that, well, let's just say it had everyone debating the fine print of the law.
Yeah, you know, what's really fascinating about Ballew is it forces us to take a close look at like how we define an attempt in the eyes of the law. And this wasn't just some hypothetical like thought experiment, you know. This guy Ballew actually did all of that back in 2002. Walked into a Texas bank looking like he stepped out of a bad movie. I mean, the wig, the briefcase with the gun, the note, and get this, even detailed instructions. He even asked for the bank manager like twice. But both times he just left, no threats, no demands, nothing.
Okay, wait, so he was clearly up to no good, right? And I mean, you think just walking in with all that would be enough to get you in some kind of trouble?
You would think so. And initially, that's exactly what happened. Ballew was convicted, but the Fifth Circuit ended up overturning that conviction. And that's where this case really becomes a masterclass in statutory interpretation. They zeroed in on a specific law, 18 U.S.C. Section 2113A, which, you know, deals with bank robbery.
Okay, so that sounds pretty straightforward, doesn't it? I mean, rob a bank, you break the law.
Well, yeah, except this particular law has these two separate paragraphs that define the crime in slightly different ways. You could almost think of it like two doors that are both marked bank robbery, but they actually lead to totally different rooms. The first paragraph focuses on actually taking the money, you know, by force, violence, or intimidation. But the second one's about entering the bank with the intent to commit a felony. So essentially, two paths that lead to the same charge.
Okay, I see. So
Oh.
they got him on entering with bad intentions, right? I mean, come on. The guy practically had a neon sign flashing future bank robber with all that gear.
Well, that's where things get tricky. See, here's the catch. The prosecutors actually chose to charge him under the first paragraph. They were arguing attempted intimidation, but the Fifth Circuit basically said, "Hold on a second. Ballew never actually intimidated anyone. He just walked in and walked out." Their whole argument came down to the wording of that first paragraph.
Wow, so even though he had the gun, the note, the whole shebang, because he didn't actually use them, he didn't technically attempt to rob the bank according to that specific part of the law. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. The court really drilled down on that word, attempts. They said that legally speaking, it only applies to the actual act of taking the money, not the intimidation itself. They were taking a very strict textualist approach. They're basically arguing that the law's wording is super specific for a reason, you know.
That's wild. I mean, I would have thought intent was enough, honestly. So what about the second paragraph then? The one about, you know, just entering with bad intentions. That sounds like it would have been a slam dunk, doesn't it?
You're absolutely right. It does seem like the more obvious choice, especially because Congress actually added that second paragraph later on specifically to address situations, well, situations just like Bellows, you know, cases where someone clearly intends to rob a bank, but they don't actually go through with the act itself.
Wait, hold on. So they went for the harder path when there was a simpler one right there. This is getting more and more intriguing. So what happens next? Tell me they didn't just let him walk.
Oh, it gets even more complicated, I promise you. See, this case isn't just about one guy and his strange attempt at a robbery, you know. This throws light on a much bigger debate in the legal world, how different courts interpret the same laws. Turns out, other courts, like the Second and Fourth Circuits, they've looked at this same law and they've reached totally different conclusions. They ruled that attempted intimidation is enough to convict someone under that first paragraph. Essentially, they said, look, he walked in with all the tools for intimidation, so he clearly attempted to use them, even if he ultimately backed down. So different courts, different interpretations of the same law, you know, that's what we call a circuit split.
Wow. Okay. So it's like depending on where you try to rob a bank, the same actions could lead to different outcomes. That seems kind of like a judicial lottery, doesn't it?
It does highlight the complexities and sometimes, you know, inconsistencies in our legal system, but in practice, this particular circuit split might not be as impactful as it seems. prosecutors can always just fall back on that second paragraph of section 2113A, the one about entering with intent to commit a felony, which seems tailor-made for cases like Ballou's. The Fifth Circuit's ruling doesn't actually change that. It's more about emphasizing the importance of choosing the right legal strategy, you know.
Yeah.
The right door, as we were saying earlier, for the specific circumstances.
So in a way, Ballou kind of got lucky.
Yeah, you could say that. The Fifth Circuit's decision essentially just boiled down to a technicality. He didn't meet the exact requirements for attempted bank robbery as defined by that first paragraph, even though he clearly intended to rob the bank. Imagine if he had, you know, if he had actually brandished the gun or slipped the teller a note even for a second, that likely would have been enough to satisfy the attempted intimidation element.
It's fascinating how one little word, attempts, can have such a huge impact. It really makes you realize how important like word choice is in the law, you know.
Yeah.
So for our listeners out there, especially the law students, what's the big takeaway from all of this?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's a powerful lesson in statutory interpretation. Ballou shows just how judges can dissect every single word in the law to reach very different conclusions. And for practicing lawyers, it's a reminder that choosing the right legal strategy, even in a seemingly straightforward case, can be the difference between winning and losing. It also highlights the potential pitfalls of a purely textualist approach. Sometimes focusing too narrowly on the literal meaning of a law can lead to outcomes that feel counterintuitive or even unjust.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. On the one hand, it seems really important to like stick to the exact wording of the law, you know,
absolutely,
to ensure fairness and prevent judges from just making stuff up as they go along. But on the other hand, what about cases like Ballou's, where someone clearly intended to commit a crime but gets off on a technicality?
That's the heart of the debate, isn't it? How do we balance the need for legal clarity with the pursuit of justice? It's not always easy, and Ballou's case is a perfect example of that struggle.
Yeah, for sure. It's a reminder that the law isn't always black and white, right? There are a lot of gray areas, and sometimes even seemingly small details can have like huge implications. So where do we go from here? I mean, if different courts are interpreting the same law in different ways, how do we even resolve that?
Well, one way is through higher court rulings. Eventually, a case like Ballou, with its conflicting interpretations, could make its way up to the Supreme Court, and they could then issue a decision that clarifies the law and sets a precedent for all the lower courts to follow. Another way is through legislation. Congress could amend the law to make its intent absolutely crystal clear, you know, closing any perceived loopholes or ambiguities.
So it's a constantly evolving system, always striving for greater clarity and consistency, right?
Exactly.
I guess that's what makes it so challenging, but also so fascinating. Yeah, it really does. Keeps things interesting, that's for sure. So to wrap up our deep dive into this curious case of United States v. Ballou,
mm-hmm.
what's the big takeaway for our listeners? What should they be walking away with?
Well, I think Ballou serves as a really powerful reminder that, you know, the law is a complex and often nuanced system. Even seemingly simple cases like this one can reveal these fascinating debates about statutory interpretation, you know,
yeah,
criminal intent, and even the very definition of an attempted crime.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it highlights the importance of like precision in legal language, right?
Yeah.
One little word like attempts can make all the difference in the world.
It also
kind of makes you wonder, you know, did the Fifth Circuit's strict textualist approach, did it actually serve justice in this case?
That's a great question, and it's one that legal scholars continue to debate, you know, to this day. On the one hand, sticking to the precise wording of the law, it helps ensure predictability and fairness. It prevents judges from just arbitrarily applying the law based on their own subjective interpretations. But on the other hand, a purely textualist approach, well, it can sometimes lead to outcomes that seem to contradict, you know, common sense or even the spirit of the law.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Like in Ballou's case where he clearly intended to rob the bank but technically didn't meet the specific requirements for attempted robbery under that particular paragraph of the law.
Exactly. It raises the question, you know, does focusing too narrowly on the letter of the law sometimes allow individuals with clear criminal intent to kind of slip through the cracks, or is it actually the best way to ensure that everyone is treated equally under the law, regardless of the circumstances? It's a really tough question.
It's a tough balance to strike for sure. And Baloo, it leaves us with a lot to ponder. It's like a legal puzzle box, you know.
Oh.
It's challenging us to think critically about the relationship between words and intent and justice.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It's a reminder that the law is this constantly evolving system, always striving to find that perfect balance, you know,
mm-hmm.
between protecting individual rights and upholding the rule of law. And cases like Baloo, well, they help illuminate the path forward, even if they leave us with more questions than answers.
Well said. Well said. That's all the time we have for today's deep dive into the world of attempted bank robbery and the complexities of legal interpretation. We hope you enjoyed this this journey through the twists and turns of United States v. Baloo. It's a case that might leave you scratching your head a little bit, but it's also a powerful reminder that the law is this fascinating and ever evolving field, you know,
full of
surprises and thought provoking debate. So until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.